SBC Media.
Welcome to the iGaming Daily Podcast, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market.
Good afternoon and welcome to the iGaming Daily. Optimove is the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. 56% of the EGR Power 50 personalised player experiences with Optimove. And as a special offer, Optimove are providing new clients a free first month when they buy Optimove. For more information and to claim the free month, go to optimove.com/SBC. Links will also be left in the podcast description. Good afternoon and welcome to today's episode. I'm joined by Ted Memmuir of SBC News and Victor Kyed, also of SBC News. Fellas, how are you doing? Ted, how was your weekend?
Very good. Very good, Joe.
Good stuff. Good stuff. And Victor, did you have a good one?
Yeah, I had a good one. Happy belated St. Patrick's Day to everybody listening and not listening that observed yesterday's celebrations.
Yeah, well, celebrations for myself yesterday, but of a different kind. Yeah, FA Cup chaos across the football fixture list. A real mad weekend of football. And but just prior to that, we're talking about sport today. In the first half of the episode, we're going to be taking a look at Cheltenham Festival, the backlash from the festival, you know, what we learn, and just generally placing a little bit of an analysis on the current state of British horse racing. Away from the festival, last week in Westminster saw a debate as industry reformist MPs demanded that betting and gaming advertising exposure come under control of new codes. We're going to take a look at that in the second half or the final furlong of the episode. So, yeah, thanks ever so much. And Victor, I'll start with you. Cheltenham, a really big event as ever. How were attendances for this event? What did you learn?
It's sort of what has been a widely circulated headline over the weekend. And that is actually the drop in attendance at this year's Cheltenham Festival. Looking at the numbers, across the first 3 days, it's dropped significantly, most notably on Wednesday with its 46,000 attendees, down from the 50,000 in 2023 and 64,000 in 2022. Total attendance was 229,000. Which was down by 10,000 from last season. I don't know what this speaks about. Are we seeing signs of trouble ahead for British horse racing?
Well, what I'm going to say here, Vic, is, as much as attendances were down, and I'm not sure if you'll agree, Ted, but as much as attendances were down, I don't think interest in horse racing is down. I think it's at fever pitch, really, because when I go across my socials on throughout Cheltenham week, it's just littered with content of horse racing, tips, picks, general horse racing, I guess banter, but yeah, just general horse racing news. And it really is that the engagement is super high. And I even saw, and I think this speaks to perhaps a deeper reason as to why attendances might be down. I saw an outside pub in Benidorm, or a bar in Benidorm, and it was packed with horse racing punters from the UK watching the racing. And the thing was that it's cheaper to go to Benidorm and watch the racing in the sun on the big screen than it is to actually go to Cheltenham. So it might be a case, you know, we're living in tough economic times. I think a lot of the low attendances don't necessarily represent a dip in interest in horse racing, but just more are an indictment of high ticket prices and the high cost of the races.
I agree with you on that one. Actually, there was a glimpse of hope in the words of Ian Renton, managing director of the Jockey Club. He was interviewed right after the races by Racing TV, and in his words, next year's festival sales are ahead of any other years already. So there have been some assurances put forward that the sector is not going anywhere. However, Let me put this conversation into second gear. I want to mention Julie Harrington, the chief executive of the British Horse Racing Authority. Her statement was issued again right after the festival. She provided a rather worrying description of the current state of British horse racing, making me, and I'm sure a number of other people, question the sort of competitiveness and sustainability of the sport. Her words were, and I quote, "The rate of decline of jump racing in Britain at the top end has outstripped the measures that have been put in place to tackle it." So, you know, horse racing, many would agree, is the crown jewel of British sports. You know, it's been a staple of British society for many, many years. It has contributed tremendously to the economy over the last decade or so, especially countryside and rural economies. And to top it all off, it is actually benefiting from the statutory levy on horse betting. But it's sort of special with this point treatment, I think, seems to be turning into a double-edged sword, because to me, and forgive me if I come off as oblivious, it seems that given all of the above, for whatever reason, the government is finding it difficult to be decisive on the direction it should be taking the industry in. Ted, what do you think about that?
Yeah, horse racing has a generational issue in terms of its day-to-day activity as a sport. And I think, look, you've got to keep Cheltenham aside to the government's review of UK gambling. So Cheltenham is a marquee race. It should be attracting audiences. Any kind of dip in that should be looked at. And I agree with Joe, it might be down to kind of ticket pricing. The other thing here is that the racing, the event itself, is coming off from the post-COVID peaks of people attending the festival itself. One thing that is happening is that the government want to keep the levy debate on racing separate to the gambling review, which I think is the right way to go around it. Yes, affordability checks are presumed to have carry an impact for the sport, but that should be revised technically. The actual day-to-day funding of the levy and what betting contributes should be a separate debate, and that's where Stuart Andrews pushing. The gambling minister is pushing Parliament towards.
Mm-hmm. Well, from everything that I've followed so far, including the 26th of February debate on the racing petition, and even going a few months back to last year, for me, Stuart Andrew has been sort of a key figure in everything that's been happening, and rightly so, given his job title. But what I've noticed is him actively trying to appease the needs of the racing industry publicly, at least. Most recently, he promised to backtrack the initial plans to include job and postcode checks in the financial risk assessments, while also promising more funding for the racing sector, two points that have been at the top of the agenda of British racing. Keep in mind, this is all while being on good terms with the UK Gambling Commission and reminding stakeholders of its authority on more than one occasion. So having all of this in mind, would I be wrong in saying that Stuart Andrew has sort of become the single bridge or the strongest bridge between British racing and policymakers?
It's a good point. I mean, there's a lot to summarise there. But yes, look, he is a fan of racing. DCMS are aware how important racing is to kind of rural constituencies. Any government are, and so are Labour. However, in the next 6 months, the review itself is heading towards kind of its technical application, and that's what it's going to be assessed in. And even, look, in the second half, we're going to talk about advertising, right? And the advertising remit of UK gaming, UK gambling. But the general feeling at the moment is that we are going into the pilot scheme of the affordability checks, and we're also implementing stake limits, right? Now, on affordability, right, the pilot has to be ensured. It has to be guaranteed that it can function and that it can work. And as myself and kind of Martin pointed out in previous podcasts, that is kind of the founding base of where the review will push on to. So everything kind of leads from these kind of pilot schemes. What is feasible, right? And where will the gambling review end up in 12 months' time?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think just before we move on to the advertising, just sort of one more, I think in terms of affordability and in terms of advertising, it's important that racing is looked at separately if it's to continue to thrive. It's important that it's looked at as its own separate entity, as a different beast to sort of other categories and other sports and other betting verticals.
Joe, I agree with that. But I think in this debate, and one of the points that was missed on is that should be applied across every major sport in the UK and how it's funded, and especially coming off COVID. You look at the state of rugby at the moment. I mean, it needs every penny in the bank. Same can be said for squash, for golf, and yes, COVID had an impact on that, but sports are finding it very, very hard to recover now.
Yeah, it's not an isolated issue for racing. That's a very valid point. And before we do shift the conversation onto to advertising, I kind of wanted to sort of end on something a bit lighter from Cheltenham. Two of the big winners from Cheltenham, Harry Redknapp and Sir Alex Ferguson, obviously both. Yeah, running home big victories. I'm not sure if you saw the win for Harry Redknapp. His horse was called Shake 'Em Up Harry, and he said it was because when he was managing, I think it was might have been West Ham. There was a fan that would sit season ticket just behind him constantly and would just scream Shake 'Em Up Harry, Shake 'Em Up Harry. So he said it was nice. He named his horse that so he could scream Come on, Shake 'Em Up Harry, rather than have it shouted at him. And yeah, it ended up winning, I think, about 6-1 as well. So, a cool story from Cheltenham. And did you guys have any winners?
No, I didn't. Me personally, no.
Sorry, I was ingrained in Entain sheets all last week. So no.
Yeah, I fell short as well. But yeah, and that's all for part one. And we move on to part two, where we tackle the subject of advertising and marketing as lobbying groups intensify.
SBC Leaders connects the gambling industry's top-tier operators and associations to share the best ideas, collaborate on solving the biggest issues, and push innovation throughout the betting and gaming industry. If you're an operator and want to join the discussion, visit sbcleaders.com for more information.
Yeah, and Ted, so to kick us off, Ted, it was an interesting week last week. There was a big debate on gambling advertising.
Yes, so look, as expected, last week, industry eyes were locked in on kind of multi-million pound wagering fixtures at Cheltenham. And yes, the headlines, as you mentioned, were dominated by Willie Mullins winning, Harry Redknapp and Sir Alex Ferguson, their studs winning their races. But away from the festival, there was a debate in Parliament where industry reformists put across that there should be now a new set of advertising codes and controls for gambling exposure. And this was read by Ronnie Cowan of the SNP and Ian Duncan-Smith, who are kind of prominent reformists. And again, one of the things that has to be highlighted is that the debate itself wasn't on advertising. I wouldn't say hijacked, but they pushed forward. The debate was meant to be on the processes of the gambling review and its technical procedures post-publication. And again, Ian Duncan-Smith, who's probably been the most prominent reformist on gambling advertising, took control of the stage with Ronnie Cowan and said, look, we're not calling for a blanket ban as such, but there needs to be centralized control, a better centralized control of how gambling advertising is pushed.
Okay, that's really interesting. And so a new code and a new set of controls, it's not to control what goes into the advertising, it's more to control when it goes out and how it goes out?
Oh, well, here's the issue, because again, this is not new, right? And technically, look, what the Gambling Review did is it's kind of retrospective of the Gambling Act in 2005, where the UK allowed basically opened the doors to betting advertising as it is today. Now, one of the things about gambling advertising is that even the regulations or the standards have not been static since 2005. So we have had, you know, the regulatory trade bodies such as the BGC implement kind of technical standards in, put in the whistle-to-whistle advertising block, lower kind of exposure to at certain times, also put in technical elements for online online targeting. And there has been an improvement and this has been stated by the watchdogs such as ASSA. Look, gambling advertising is becoming less an exposure. However, I think for the reformists, the underlying debate is that when they watch sport, every time they see an advert for a gambling or a bookmaker, it annoys them.
Yeah.
But is that enough for a wholesale approach? But again, you know, if they're outside of the public concern that, yes, it's annoying to watch a gambling ad, right? Is that enough to kind of bring it to Parliament?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's about exposure and who is watching at what time, I guess. And yeah, if it's, minors being exposed to gambling ads would, I guess, be the issue. One thing I would say is to sort of shift the conversation a little, we've seen gambling very much at the forefront of the political agenda in recent years. We are in an election year right now, and whenever that comes around, it seems like it will be in the second half of the year. But it feels like gambling has taken a little bit of a back seat and will be less of a forefront issue at this upcoming election.
Yes, and I think part of it is because there is consensus from both camps that, you know, gambling will be reformed. It's where it ends up at and what the regulation looks like. Now, going back to gambling advertising, right, at no point in the review have they called for anything like a blanket ban. But one of the things that the review has left open is that those stakeholders related in media and in sports can form their own codes to regulate gambling, which I think, you know, and they left this with the Premier League, for example, who had their meeting with regards to shirt sponsorships of, you know, what level of exposure do they want with gambling? And I think, again, when this was put up for debate, you know, during these debates, this is where they were pointing towards kind of the technical control, that they wanted kind of a centralized kind of standard of like, no, that can no longer apply. That has to be rewritten, or that has to be kind of reformed in what the gambling white paper is recommending.
Okay, and to make it a more to sort of shift it to the capital, one place where there is an election coming up that's very soon is the London mayoral election, and I think we had them in May, and there's been increased discussion around advertising of gambling in the capital, Ted, is that right? And specifically around Sadiq Khan as well.
Yes. So on Friday, the London Assembly, they urged Sadiq Khan to implement a ban on gambling advertising on the Transport for London network, the TfL. Sadiq Khan had committed to this in his 2021 campaign for London Mayor, and it hadn't been implemented. However, this time around, they cited kind of academic research on the exposure, but again, they used very loose narrative in how what the academic conclusions were, and again. Look, gambling regulation is a very nuanced conversation. And even the London Assembly said, look, there is no academic underlining that banning gambling advertising works or it reduces exposure to problem gambling, like real exposure to the highest risks of problem gambling. And again, you know, we seem to be going round in circles with this debate in advertising, whereby because we don't have the academic research, right? Oh, and nothing is concrete. And advertising is even quite kind of boundless in itself, right? I mean, what does it constitute to advertise a product fairly and responsibly, right? And not just for gaming, but as you know, for other high risk products, right? It's very hard for governments to draw up effective regulation on how to protect the consumer, which is like the definitive of what is trying to be achieved.
Yes, yeah, it's kind of interesting, this discussion. It kind of expands into a wider societal discussion. I notice, you know, that there is a lot of talk about warnings being placed on, you know, fatty foods now and that type of thing. Yeah, this is a marketing issue though, right? Like, how do you warn of how many safeguards do you want to put in place when you're sort of creating advertising guidelines? This is not just a issue that's isolated to the gambling industry right now. It's a wider societal issue about advertising and who is being advertised to.
But even in ASSA's feedback to the white paper and its consultation, it believes, and I think it quite rightly, it said, like, look, we believe that the risk elements of gambling promotions are free bonuses and incentives, and they should be kind of restricted in messaging and then apply greater emphasis on safer gambling. Now, the industry has done that, right?
Yeah.
It is reducing its promotion of bonuses and free bets, right? You can hardly comment on that. And also the aesthetics of, like, it can't promote certain aesthetics related to gambling, such as you will, you know, change your life, right? They've been implemented for now 4 years. I believe that you're right. I mean, this is now turning into debate about the control in itself and what is control of gambling exposure and who should oversee that, but how should it be reported on? And I won't be surprised if the reformists go back and say, no, now we demand sign-off on any type of gambling advertising campaign over the next six months. And that's going to be in your LCCP, your licensing practices as a UK operator.
Wow. Yeah, that will obviously have a big impact on, you know, partnerships and sponsorships and all sort of elements.
Can I add that is my belief, right?
Yeah. straight from the crystal ball. That's a big prediction. Vic, I'll give you an opportunity to come in there to close us off. Where do you stand on advertising? How does the future look like for the sector?
Well, to be honest, it's a very nuanced issue because on top of the operators who should be, considering and planning on careful advertising strategies, this affects other people down the line. For example, brand ambassadors, you know, like we were talking about the ASA, and there was an interesting case from last week that I was eager to talk about. They warned, I'm not sure if they should have penalty, but they warned Leo Vegas and their BetUK brand for using a former footballer, Adebayo Akinfenwa, and I'm sorry if I'm butchering his name. They used him in a radio commercial promoting BetUK services. And here comes the question of guidelines not being static, as Ted mentioned, because Akinfenwa in his career never played in the Premier League. His highest career highlight was one season in the Championship, and according to ASA's own code of broadcasting advertising, such footballers, former footballers, and current players in lower leagues and non-league clubs are deemed as low risk, right? Pretty understandable. So, according to this, by itself, Akinfenwa shouldn't have had any problems. However, they reviewed the decision, and the ASA went against its initial ruling by deeming him actually high risk, because you know, the player, he's obviously a big guy. If you search him on Google, you're gonna see his impressive lad, and and he was actually the ASA deemed him a code hero among younger audiences because of another, you know, here we add another layer to the whole problem. He was famous in a couple of editions of the video game FIFA, which is quite popular among younger generations. So while not, you know, while being completely in line with ASA's code of broadcasting, being a low-risk player, you have another whole social, you know, layer added to it off the pitch, which, you know, brought him trouble. So it's a very nuanced topic. I don't know where to start from and where to finish. But yeah, I just wanted to talk about it because it was an interesting ruling.
The guidelines are an issue, especially on aesthetics. And, you know, if I'm just going to add one more thing here, is that I think ASA and CAP are in for a very busy summer. If we take into, you know, the Euro Championships coming up. And also, I think that as a governing body, there's got to be as a monetary body, there has to be a level of partnership, no, or understanding,
yeah,
or with the industry.
Now, the collaboration, right?
I don't think ASA really want to be there, signing off every email sent by an operator marketing team. And I think that would just give them such a tedium that I don't think that they would back kind of these very stringent centralized controls being imposed on them, just because, you know, you're promoting an ex-footballer to your customer base. But one thing that I'd alert the industry is that I think that they really have to have to be aware of what they're putting out in the summer months. And I think that there's going to be kind of a more volume to this debate as we see kind of a concentration of football at the end of the season.
Yeah, 100% agree. It's going to be an interesting time in the summer, a difficult time for those bodies as well. And the case you mentioned, Vic, I think people can read about it on SBC News. A really interesting one, because Akin Fenwa is, you know, is a unique character. He is a unique proposition as a marketing, yes, a marketing asset, I guess is the right term. But he does bring more eyes and a younger generation than a standard League One or League Two footballer. So a really interesting proposition, not an easy one to deal with. And a good example. And also, you pronounced his name beautifully, Vic. You missed the call in as European football commentator.
Just to all marketing directors, just be careful when you sign off on your England bonus promotion this summer.
Yeah, man. I think that's a good way to sign off the podcast. So thanks ever so much for joining me, chaps. And have a good week.
Thank you for listening to today's iGaming Daily Podcast, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders magazine. Happy reading.